TransCanada Corp has proposed converting an existing natural gas pipeline into a cross-country oil pipeline. The proposed Energy East pipeline would carry 1.1 million barrels of oil per day from Empress, Alberta to St. John, New Brunswick. The Council of Canadians is one of the groups that opposes the Energy East pipeline. Mary Madrangi is an energy and climate campaigner with the Council of Canadians, and she joins me now by phone from Vancouver. Hello, Miriam. So the existing pipeline that's there now, the natural gas pipeline, only covers 70% of the route from Saskatchewan to Quebec City. And I can understand why they'd want it to go to Alberta, as that's where oil is being produced. But do you know why TransCanada would want to expand the pipeline all the way to St. John?
Absolutely. Well, a main reason for this pipeline is to get it to new markets. That's basically what they're trying to do with the Western-based pipelines, the Enbridge Northern Gateway, which we hear tons about, and we hear tons of opposition, same with the Kinder Morgan. These are all pipelines, essentially, that are being pushed through to get this crude to new markets. That's exactly what they're trying to do with the Energy East. So the further it goes to the Atlantic, the easier it is to get them on tankers, to get to the coast of the United States, the Gulf, the East Coast of the United States, the Gulf Coast of the United States, to Europe and India. They're looking at getting it as far as they can. So really, that's essentially why it's easier to ship it there. If it only goes to, let's say, Montreal, then, you know, you have to send tankers through the St. Lawrence. So I think the fact that it goes all the way to the coast is really proof that they just want to get it anywhere that will pay anything.
And so, as I mentioned, it already is a natural gas pipeline. Can you talk about whether it is riskier to transport oil versus natural gas on this line?
Well, there's multiple reasons that this pipeline is pretty risky. One, I think, huge one is that right now it is, like you said, transporting gas. And then by converting this pipeline into something that would carry oil, you'll have to put in more pumping stations, more infrastructure, because oil just doesn't, oil or crude or diluted bitumen, whatever the hazardous material they plan on putting through, a liquid is harder to put through a pipeline than a gas is. So, of course, that like depends, or that will impact the safety of this pipeline. But in addition to that, this pipeline was built in the 50s, which already you can see that after over 60 years, a pipeline would start to degrade. And so then after that, changing it to a pipeline that would transport a heavier and more corrosive material is more dangerous, as well as pipeline infrastructure generally has probably improved. So really, there's a lot of question marks about the safety of this pipeline, and not just material.
So given these risks and these concerns, are there federal regulatory steps that TransCanada will have to go through before this is approved?
Well, like most pipeline projects and industrial projects, or energy projects, I should say, they have to go through the National Energy Board. And I think with Harper's having decreased the amount of time that these companies have with these proposals, that's one of the reasons that TransCanada is saying they've actually delayed their putting in their proposal. So they were originally going to apply to convert this pipeline this year, actually, but they're delaying it to 2014 because they want to cross their T's and dot their I's as much as they think they can to get it through this process. Now, 2 years, is that actually enough to listen to people's concerns as well as assess the environmental impacts of this? Probably not, but Harper is also in on this and trying to get these pipelines pushed through again so he can just trade it all and also benefit off this bottom line. And really that's what these pipelines are about, are benefiting a few corporations and maybe a few politicians to profit while everyone else faces the true costs and the true risks.
The Energy East, it does go through a lot of high population areas, and the Council of Canadians has an excellent resource on their website where you list all of the cities and the towns that it goes to. So if people are interested, they can go to canadians.org. And here in Manitoba, the pipeline goes through our most densely populated, the southern part of the province, and including the cities of Brandon and here in Winnipeg. Do you know about where it goes relative to, you know, the urban part of the city?
To be honest, I haven't looked specifically at Winnipeg, but like you said, like definitely folks should check out the map online. And also, like, this pipeline actually had a rupture 18 years ago near Rapid City, Manitoba. So really, this is something that is really close to Winnipeg, and really it is in these urban centers as well as all these other communities that it could impact. It's really up to these people it's really up to us, all of us, to actually organize and say that this pipeline is really a threat to our community's health and our community's water, and ultimately we're going to stand up and say something about it.
Have any communities been fairly active in opposing the Energy East proposal?
Absolutely. What's interesting about this pipeline is it's something that TransCanada hasn't even applied for yet, and we're already seeing mobilization and opposition. So a lot of folks have been coming together in Ottawa. Ecology Ottawa has been working quite closely with us, and a lot of local organizers and activists who have been attending TransCanada's open houses and going there and actually giving TransCanada the real information about it and showing that they're not going to allow TransCanada to spread their misinformation through these open houses. We've seen a lot of really great stuff coming from North Bay. I definitely encourage people to check out their campaign. It's called Save Canada instead of TransCanada, where they actually dressed up like TransCanada staff and went to these open houses and shared the information that they knew about how this pipeline could impact their local watershed. So we are seeing a lot of communities actually doing quite a bit of mobilizing and organizing already. As well, over in Atlantic Canada, there was recently a forum on alternative energies, and that was going parallel to an energy industry summit that was happening in the same city. So we are definitely seeing communities organize around this because they are concerned, and they are not really wanting their health to be impacted, their water, and like all those things I mentioned. They don't want those to be threatened because they know what pipelines can do.
It's inspiring to hear that there's organization in Atlantic Canada, because I could see it being sold there as jobs, pipeline construction jobs and refinery jobs for people there, which is really important for the region.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And definitely that's what the Premier of New Brunswick, Premier Allward, has really been touting there. They've really been using this jobs argument of this pipeline will bring jobs, especially because people are starting to say, like, okay, this pipeline won't bring national energy security, which was a previous argument of theirs. But really, we need to be asking ourselves what kind of jobs we want to be sustaining our communities. I just think of Manchester, which is a community in Houston, where they've done tons of studies and shown that children living close by are 50% more likely to get leukemia. Living close by to refineries, I should say, are 50% more likely to get leukemia than children who just live 20 or 30 kilometers away. So really, we need to ask what kind of industries we're cultivating in our communities, and if we want to be fostering healthy communities, or that we're just going to say that an industry is going to bring us jobs.
On the Council of Canadians website, you also show all of the First Nations communities that will be affected by Energy East. What have you heard from First Nations about their concerns?
Many First Nations have been talking about various pipelines, and I think what we should be talking about as well is that it's not just First Nations communities, it's not just settler communities, but these communities impact all people. What's unique about First Nations communities is that the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People even states that these communities have an inherent right to have free, prior, and informed consent to all projects that are happening on their lands. And that essentially means that they have the right to say no to any projects that are going to affect them. And this pipeline, like I said, is a conversion. And so the previous pipeline was put in the 1950s, which was prior to when the federal government was even asking anyone, and definitely not asking Indigenous communities. So now that a lot more communities are coming together and saying they're going to assert that right to say no to these projects. It'll be interesting to see what happens now that, you know, that is brought to greater light and there is more attention on that. Because if over 60 years ago they weren't asked, now TransCanada is still not asking, the federal government is still not asking, that doesn't mean that they're not going to assert that right. And now, especially with Idle No More, we're seeing a lot more settler folks come together and say that they're going to support these communities and their inherent rights to have consent to these projects and to have agency over the resources, their local resources, and their lives.
When this is discussed in the corporate media, the debate is almost often framed as, should we transport oil by pipeline or should we transport oil by another method such as rail? And I know after the Lac-Mégantic rail disaster this summer, there was sort of more of a push for pipelines, or, you know, that discussion is it rail or is it pipeline? Can you talk about the importance of shifting the discussion more broadly about the problems with Canadian oil production and the problems with transporting oil by any method?
Right. I'm really glad you brought that second part of that that question, because, yeah, a lot of that conversation is being wrapped up in what is the best way to transport it and not what is the best way to create and foster healthier communities. Because what is at the source of all this these transportation methods is the tar sands. And so regardless of how it's transported, if it's extracted, then it is impacting local communities. It's impacting their water. It's impacting their food. It's impacting children, elders. It is impacting entire livelihoods. It's deforesting the boreal forest, and it's destroying tons of land. It's violating treaty rights. Like, think of the endless reasons that these projects need to be stopped at the source, that it's not just about pipelines. It's not just about spills. It's not just about a derailment, but it's also about what's happening at the source. And this comes to light with all fossil fuel projects, with coal extraction, with fracking, with natural gas. So that is definitely should be something that is brought more to the debate, is that it's not just about transportation, but how are we actually creating livable and healthy communities?
Earlier, you mentioned Stephen Harper's government's support for pipelines. Has there been an official government response to this specific proposal to Energy East?
To be honest, I haven't seen too much from the federal government, but what I have seen quite a bit is Premier Allward championing this and going to talk to other premiers and trying to convince them that this is definitely a great idea. They were definitely trying to convince Quebec Premier Marois. They've been talking to Premier Alison Redford, who pushes pipelines anywhere she can. She's talking with the BC Premier in a few weeks. I'm based in BC, so definitely keeping our eyes on that. So it's been like a real push of some of the provinces, and that's more what I've seen from politicians. When the pipeline proposal actually pushes through, we may see that Harper is doing exactly the same thing that he's doing out here out west, which is essentially, you know, touring and coming around to communities and trying to push these pipeline projects and talk about how great he thinks they are. So I'm sure we can, in the future, we may see some of these parallels as well.
You're coming here to Winnipeg tomorrow to speak, and I'm going to provide people the information, but do you have any final recommendation for people here in Manitoba if they do want to oppose this pipeline going through, what they should do?
Well, I think that when it comes to any pipeline projects that we are seeing all across North America, is that communities are coming together and fighting these projects in the best way they know how. So I know in Texas there have been folks who have been standing in front of machinery. They've been chaining themselves to machinery. Other places have been doing petitions. They've been having rallies, other types of blockades. In northern BC, there are communities that have set up log cabins and traditional pit houses on GPS coordinates of pipelines. So really, it's, I think, up to, you know, people to get together with their neighbors, their families and friends, and to see, like, how they can best do this and what's appropriate for their communities and how to actually stop these projects from really threatening their lives.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Miriam Madrangi of the Council of Canadians, and she will be in Winnipeg tomorrow, Tuesday night, to speak at a public event, and it's called The Truth About Energy East. It starts at 7 p.m. at Mondragon, and admission is free. And Michael Cannon, Crystal Green, and Nina Wasty of Idle No More will also speak at the event. And you're listening to Mudwater, mudwater.org on CKUW 95.9 FM.